City Talk.
It's Talking Tranmere on Radio City Talk. My name's Matt Jones, and this afternoon, or this evening, my guests in the studio, former Tranmere striker Alex Hay and Rovers fan Matty Horton. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
So, obviously, we've got a game against Rotherham to look back on, a 1-1 draw there with a last-gasp equaliser from Stephen Payne. There's a game against Gillingham to look ahead to. But the only thing that is being talked about in Tranmere world at the moment is this new investment. So, let's start with that. Santini Group have come in, Indonesian firm, and they have bought a minority stake in the club. Alex, your thoughts on it?
Well, obviously, it's exciting. I think any type of revenue coming in is exciting for the club, for the fans. Obviously, there's a lot of scepticism at times with them being from abroad and with what's gone on with other clubs and things like that. But I think the way the club's gone about it, in terms of it only being a small proportion of investments up to now, is an easy way for them to have a look at the club deeper inside it and get a feel for it in the area and things like that, and for the club to get a feel for them.
I like the fact that Mark Palios had said that they'd been over to Indonesia and they've had them over a couple of times as well to get them to appreciate the ethos of the club, get them to understand the area and the strong community links as well. So that's pleasing to see, given that we have seen clubs similar size to Tranmere's, you know, not have that sort of insight when buying clubs. I'm alluding to Bury, obviously, whose previous owner, or still owner, Steve Dale, didn't understand that the town had a football club. So it's good that Mark and Nicola have brought these over.
You've got to integrate to the community as well. I think that's been the biggest selling point, I think, for me, is the fact that what you said, that they brought them over, they've had a good look at the area and how that develops with the fans, and it's important, and that's taken a big part of, to be fair.
I think it's interesting to see how this develops going forward now, and that's the question I think everyone is asking. Well, firstly, what's this mean for Mickey Mellon and his transfer budget, and secondly, is this going to lead to a buyout or a partial ownership, a 50% share or something like that? That is what everyone's going to be looking at and thinking, how does this develop from here?
The first thing as a fan, you look at, are we going to get more money? Can we buy better players? Is it going to grow like that? So that's what the fans are going to be looking at in terms of that side of it. And hopefully Mickey does get a bigger playing budget so we can become more competitive in League One, and long-term plan, hopefully, to get up to the Championship. But as you say, you've got to look at the bigger picture. What's the long-term plans? Is it going to be? Are they going to become a bigger proportion of the ownership of the club, and what Mark and Nicola are looking to do long-term for the area?
I think Mark alluded to the Championship in his statement, didn't he? Which was interesting, and it's seen as, you know, that's obviously the long-term ambition of the club, is to maybe return to the Championship, because he was talking about sustaining us in that division. Like Alex said, you know, as a fan, automatically I think, well, how many players can we bring in? You know, what calibre of players can we get to improve the squad? The statement was sort of talking about Wi-Fi and other aspects of investment, which as a general fan, you might think...
Wi-Fi
is
always important.
Yeah. Well, I said to Matty, I said, at least we'd be able to check the half-time scores quicker at Prenton Park. But that sort of stuff is all, you know, from a business perspective, Mark and Nicola will understand that, completely different to me as a fan. But, you know, as Alex said at the beginning, it's exciting for Tranmere, because at one time we were a club in recess and no one really wanted to touch us. So it's great that we've got this opportunity to get some further investments.
I think as well it's a selling point for the club, bringing players in. New investments, it sounds exciting. What are they going to do to the training ground? Because there's been talk about that, developing that. And that's all selling points for players coming in. Tour of Indonesia, yeah. Get us all out there on a holiday, summer tour. But it's all selling points, especially to players coming in. I remember when I went to Rushden and signed there, obviously I'd be in the ground, but I didn't see the training facilities. And when I was taken there, I was like shocked at how futuristic it was and how great it was at that moment in time. Obviously that backfired later on, but it's a huge selling point. So the training ground developments, looking to the future, is a selling point to bring players into the club.
I got quite a few tweets when the news was announced yesterday. Lots of people sending memes of money, or people throwing money or dropping money. But my favourite tweet, I think, that I got or saw was someone saying, well, great that they've come in the day after the transfer window closed.
Cleverly planned, I think. Cleverly planned.
There have been some huge takeover debacles involving Tranmere in the past. Do we remember when they were put on eBay for 10 million quid?
10 million, yeah, I do remember.
Do you remember Club Nine were sniffing around at one point and Lorraine Rodgers ended up sending or selling a bit of the car park to someone at some point? There was Michael Wilde and his proposed takeover before Mark and Nicola as well.
Bobby Fowler's always been rumoured to be back every few months as well.
In McManaman have always been touted as like a partnership as well.
Did any of these happen when you were there? Can you remember them? Was it unsettling at all, or the kind of thing players talk about?
Not really. I think if it's unsettling, if things are going bad, you know, stuff's going on behind the scenes. I think I was there when Mark and Nicola took over as the scout, not as a player, that nothing really happened in that side of it. But the other side of it, when I was working behind the scenes, obviously, there was talk of a takeover. It was going to happen. And then you see it from a different perspective. Obviously, the manager at the time wasn't Mark's manager, and you could see the worry straight away. Is it going to cost him his job? Which it did in the end. And that side of it. So you see, I've seen different sides of it, and it's interesting because it might unsettle the players if it's a big takeover. However, with them doing it as only a little small bit up to now, I don't think it'll make much impact on them whatsoever.
Hope that's the case.
Yeah, I think the danger would be if this investment was to increase, and I don't know anything about this group or the guy that's on the board, but if we
know that their dad's worth $600 million.
That's always
absolutely, it's always good. But then if they sort of want a control and stake of the club, and then they look and say, well, so-and-so is not our manager. Mm-hmm. We want to bring a name in. No disrespect to Mickey. But a similar thing when Barnes came in, it was more about getting bums on seats, yeah, I think, at the time, as opposed to a footballing decision, if we're honest. And the worry, only a small worry, because I'm purely projecting here into the future, if they were to take a more control and stake of the club, is that they start playing around with a system and a setup that has obviously been quite successful, well, really successful in the last couple of years.
One thing's for sure is that this has been coming for quite a while. I think Mark Palios has said that he's been having talks since November-ish last year with various interested parties who wanted to invest. And this particular takeover is no, or say, I say takeover, this particular investment is no surprise to a lot of fans, given the way it's been almost played out on social media by the go-between guy between the two consortiums.
Yeah, I mean, I've been following it, and I've been wondering, like, who's this guy and what's going on? There was always going to be something happening with this Indonesian group because there's been that much social media traction over it. And to finally get it confirmed yesterday, albeit a day after transfer deadline day, was it's good. This is Radio
City Talk. Always say former Tranmere striker, but of course you were chief scout at Prenton Park.
Yeah.
You have been at a number of other clubs as well, and you are currently chief scout at Fylde.
Yep. Been here for about 4 years now since Tranmere. It's an interesting, totally different side to the game, but it's something that interests me, and obviously I take passion in doing it.
You've done a little bit of dabbling in coaching, in management. Why did you decide to go down the scouting route?
Because I was offered it. No. it was just a different idea. I wanted to stay in the game like everyone does. I dropped out a lot sooner than possibly I should have. And it was something I wanted to stay involved in. I didn't quite know how. Obviously, I managed Camelades. I was playing manager there for probably just over a year. Was interesting, but it's a lonely place being a manager, even at that low level. Those issues with money and things like that. So when I resigned from there, I was asked to go to Chester as the scout, and I just thought, right, I'll give it a go, see how this works out. And obviously I found a passion for it, and I've done it since.
So that's when Neil Young was there, current Marine manager, but yeah, had so much success at Chester.
Yeah, always great times. I think we got three championships in 3 years, so it was brilliant. And just to see that club grow from where they were, just a pub team, really. And once Youngie started, I think the grass was about 1 metre high on the pitch, and he had to arrange a lawnmower. So to move them from there and getting up into the conference was a huge thing for them, and to be part of that was huge for me.
One thing I want to know, though, is what does a scout actually do? We hear the words football scout quite regularly, and we know they go to games, we know they watch players and that kind of thing. But what's your kind of bread and butter?
It depends what the club wants more than anything. There's different types of scouts. So there's often oppositional scouts where you'll go and watch opposition. You'll see how they play, who does well for them, what formations they play tactically, how they move going forward defensively, and transitioning and things like that. And a manager will get reports on every possible team that you're going to come across. Some managers want two or three reports on them. as you go higher on the divisions, that'll become part of video analysis as well. So during my final few weeks at Tranmere, yeah, they wanted it to be part of video analysis. So you'd have to jot down what they were doing tactically per minute, and then that was linked to a video so it could be shown to the players, so it's more specific. But you'd have lots of different ways you can watch teams now. There's things on computers where you can watch teams, then you can pick out individual players making forward passes, so it can be broken down into individual players, stroke teamwork, and it goes into a lot more detail as you go higher up the leagues. I was lucky enough to go over to Liverpool and have a look at their scouting department, the oppositional side, and it blew me out the walls at how much detail goes into it, and it's fantastic to go up those levels. The other side of it is looking at players. Head of recruitment, head of scouting will get ideas of players who they need looked at. Manager might say he's doing well in this league, can you go and watch him? And then it'll be looking at whether they suit our style of play. If they do, you'll watch it and then you'll go deeper into a report. So the way I used to work it is a player should be watched 3 or 4 times. First, a lower level report. If they move on and do well, then you go to a layer 2, which will go into more detail specific about their position, what they do well, what they don't do well. Then it'll be down to the manager to go and have a look at them or the management staff. If they decided to go, then it'll be hopefully doing your due diligence where you'll do a bit of research on the background, look at the family side of it, look at what they like as a person, where that'll fit in the dressing room. So we'll get a lot of planning goes into it. Obviously, it's not always that complicated because you need to move quick on a player and it doesn't work out. Possibly they don't fit into the dressing room. You find out things about the personal life which doesn't suit the club and so on and so forth. So it can go in a lot of detail.
I'm sure it can. And obviously, when you're going to watch an individual player, is it a bit like when Sky used to have that player cam on the and they just follow that player around?
Yeah, every scout will do it in their own way. But if I'm watching an individual player, I'll tend to try and arrive early and I'll watch them in the warm-up as well because I want to get a feel for them, what they're like with the rest of the players, body language, things like that makes a big impact on me. So I'll be watching them not just on the ball but off the ball, what they're doing and things like that. So it depends on every scout and every scout's got a different opinion. I've looked at players that I've thought not for us or not for me. It's gone on to another club and done fantastically well. So sometimes it's opinion based, but it depends on having a link with the manager. I know what Charles Sorter wants in his players. He's got it down specifically to positions, what sort of player he wants. So I'll know straight away within the first 10, 15 minutes if he'll fit the way we play. If that's the case, then we'll look at him in more detail.
Al, have you always got a target, or do you ever, like, if you've got a free night when there's a game on, mm-hmm. that you just go for the hell of it and someone might catch your eye or you
definitely
might think he's
through
a prospect?
Every game I'm going, even if I'm going to watch an opposition, I'll mark players down who's done well. If a player's done well, I'll try and look at them again. I'll get someone to look at them, and if it continues, that's when we'll go and do a report. So it's constantly, if I haven't got an official game to go to, I'll just go and take a game in. I pick lower league ones because there's lots of good players in lower league, and sometimes you can pick a diamond out of there and who can go on to bigger things. So I think it's important, but you'll get scouts all the time, and I know from Tram, yeah, Mickey's got scouts all over looking, and it's important to have a big base all over the country at all league levels as well.
When you say lower league, what level are you talking? Talking North West Counties, Evo Stick, or just National League North?
No, I've been to Evo Stick games. I've been to North West Counties. If someone is very young playing in those leagues, it's a big step up. And if they're playing with adults, you can get an idea straight away, and that might be someone you can move into the academy sort of idea and stuff like that. So I'll go to any level because players can be picked out and they can kick on. Obviously, it doesn't always work, but it's important to look in these leagues.
And so often, I think we'd all agree, in football it's just a case sometimes of having a manager or a person who's willing to take a chance on you, because if you don't get that chance in the first place, you're never going to make it as a footballer. And there will be players out there, the game is littered with them, who are lower down the levels, who have definitely got the ability to play in the National League or in the Football League, but they just haven't had that chance.
You need a manager to believe in you. That's it. That goes for all levels. If you've got a manager who believes in you, trusts in you, you'll go on. There's players who've played in the Premier League who I don't think are that great, but a manager's trusted them, played them, and they've gone and made a huge, massive career out of it. So it all boils down to trust.
I think it's a lot of the time you hear about players who have been told that they're too small for mm-hmm. one team, and then they go on, they're an absolute worldie for someone else. Yeah. And it's, you talk about that trust, don't you? Do you have a pro forma when you're looking at a player? So you in terms of height, build, that sort of stuff?
Again, it depends what individual? It depends what your team wants. So if I look someone in our league now, Solihull, all their players seem to be over 6'2". So they've obviously gone out to sign players who are big. So they probably look at players' size first. Mm. Yeah, will he fit the way we play? We personally, because we play the football on the floor, height's not such a big deal. Now, the last couple of years, we've sort of needed height in certain positions. So we'll go, how big is he? Okay, that's going to fit. Let's see how he plays. So it does have an impact, but it's got to fit within what the manager wants. Every manager wants something different. So they might want someone small and Jinky who's good with the ball, the feet, so they can pass the ball to his feet. Other managers won't want that. So it depends on the manager as much as anything.
But it's a lot of travelling as well. Remember when Les Parry was in charge at Tranmere and they didn't necessarily have a particular big scouting network at this time, if any scouting network, and that might have been down to budget and funding and whatever. But he used to say, you know, he was pretty much at a game 6 or 7 days a week.
Yeah, it is. I used to see Les at games and he was half asleep, like, because he was that tired, because it is a lot of travelling, it's a lot of work, and a lot of work goes into it, and a lot of it does go down to budget. You've got to pay scouts now, so we've got scouts down in London, whether it's just expenses or it might be we've got scouts doing oppositional reports because it costs too much money to send me down there. So you've got to weigh these things out. So clubs got to really want the scouting department to work well, and they've got to put money into it. Now, when I started at Tranmere, there was nothing. There was nothing. I took over from Dave Philpott and that was it. And that surprised me really in a way. And we started developing ways that we wanted scouts all over the country in certain regions, because that's how the bigger clubs do it. So you lead off them, and that's where you go, but it all boils down to budget.
And then the other kind of facet to a scout is the scouts who pick up young lads when they're very young, get them into a club, and they maybe don't get paid for it at that time, but they will get a fee if that player gets sold.
Yeah, that's the other side of it. So if a player gets sold or he gets in the first team, then they'll get a small fee at the end of that. So it's about linking that. But that's important for the community as well, to see Tranmere representatives around the place. And that was something we wanted to go for, but we were arguing when I first started about giving scouts a coat with the Tranmere badge on, because I think it's important to be seen. But then it was boiling down to money. We didn't have the money to go and buy 50 scout coats. So that's what it boils down to, and it's hard to do because you've got people all over that want to do it. So wear a Tranmere badge on them and say, I'm looking for players. So it's important that that's developing constantly.
Well, I'm with you there. It's about setting the right image, isn't it? It's like when you see a cricket player, you want their shirt tucked in, or a rugby player, you want them all to look in a formulaic way.
Yeah, and it breeds that. So if you're at a Sunday league game and see someone wearing a Tranmere badge, if you're a player, if you're a fan, if you're just walking, it's in your mind. So you're thinking, oh, Tranmere are getting around the place a lot, because you see Liverpool scouts, you see Everton scouts, you see Man City scouts, you see all the scouts of the big clubs. But Tranmere should be huge in this area, and they need to be picking up all the young kids.
So how many games do you reckon you get to in an average week?
Average week, I'd say 5, 6, 7. Depends.
Sounds
depends
like a dream to me.
It is. It can be a dream, but it can also be hard work, especially when you've got to juggle with other things. But it is. It's great watching football games. It's the paperwork side of it's quite difficult. So I've got to keep a spreadsheet of players we've looked at, who needs looked at. Then Chal might come to me. Last week he came to me, we need a list of right backs who were available. So I had to go and reel that off within 24 hours after speaking to agents, endless agents, who's available, speaking to lots of different clubs, who's available for loan, who's not available for loan, and then putting that to the manager then. So it gets quite complicated at times.
Never have to pay to get into a game either.
Sometimes you do. Some clubs really? Are on them. They'll give you the ticket, yeah. Sometimes the clubs, I went to Notts County last night and they were fantastic. They really looked after me, but some clubs don't want to look after you in any way at all, and they're horrible.
Are you ever met with like a bit of suspicion? You know, sometimes, like someone thinking you're going to tap someone off?
What I like to do, I like to sit out the way of anyone. So I was put in a director's box last night at Notts County. So I didn't like it because I felt like very enclosed. So I went up to the top of the stand. But then you get the odd fan looking around. Who are you looking at? What are you doing? Mm. So then you get into a conversation and it'll be like, don't be writing that down, what you're writing that down for. So it's like disguise sometimes, hats on, out the way.
It's like that thing on the internet, like when a team's suddenly interested in your player, and then you'll see all these fans of, he's rubbish, you don't want him, oh no, he's terrible.
Yeah. Put him off, that's what it is, yeah, put them off.
Because a few times I've sat in the main stand, I usually sit behind the dugout, but occasionally I've been in the main stand and you might see someone coming in with, you know, a Rotherham badge Wigan, and you think, you're looking at us or you're looking at the opposition, because neither of us are playing Wigan, you know, who's ours?
No, it does, yeah, yeah. You'd always get questioned usually, but I don't wear any of the club official stuff, so no one usually knows. They just think I'm a weirdo at the back of the stand.
You should be sketching.
Yeah.
The other thing, I guess, as well, is that you are Fylde's chief scout, but how many times do you actually see Fylde play?
Last year, I saw the two Wembley games. I think on one of the games, we saw us play three times live, which is frustrating at times, but I have to try. So I'll watch us sometimes on a computer because I want to keep up to date with any changes Charles made and things like that. So I'm in constant contact with Charles just to keep up to date with it. Is he looking at changing anything or anything like that? So it's important. The communication side of it is really important because you're the link to the manager, really.
It must be difficult from that sense as well, though, because as much contact as you have with Dave Chaloner, he is asking potentially for a player who fits into the system and the way that Fylde are playing, and you have not seen it live on that many occasions. So you're having to constantly keep up to date.
Yeah, and it is tough, but then again, it's a relationship with the manager as well. I've got a good relationship with Charles, so he shows a lot of trust in me. Obviously, he's employed me, he's been happy with what I've done up to now, so he has to have a lot of trust in me. As I say, I'll speak to him after most games just to check how the game's gone, how we played, was there any change he wanted to make, are we looking at doing anything in the future, and it happens 3-4 times a week.
Radio City Talk. 1-1 draw at Rotherham on Saturday. Last gasp draw. Those are the best kind, aren't they?
Yeah, phenomenal. And the scenes behind the goal as well with the fans.
They look good. They look good. I watched them all on Twitter and it's very exciting. I think it was just, for me, one of the biggest things was seeing the bench get up and run and the subs get up and run, because that shows a lot of togetherness. They wanted to win, which is huge. But last minute goals are always a huge impetus on the season. It could be a massive thing now.
And Mickey said that in his post-match interview, didn't he, about that passion. He said, that's what you want to see. And I think he said, if we're not going to see that, then we might as well go home and play chess, which, you know, that's what you want your manager to be passionate about.
You need
it.
Everyone together, even the subs. It's so important. Like, subs can sometimes be, like Brian Little used to always say, go and be a good sub, and that means get involved in a game, whatever it is, whether you play 5 minutes, whether you play half an hour, whether you don't play at all, but get involved in it, feel a part of it. I think it's like underrated. You've got to, and to see the subs jumping up and down, if they've been subbed and being rubbish, it doesn't matter. It's about being a collective and being part of it, and that was the biggest thing for me. It was very exciting.
Going off on a tangent here, but didn't Brian put you on once because you were doing star jumps on the side?
Yeah, he called me the jack in the box, like, because I'd do anything to get on the pitch, and as soon as someone went down injured, whether it was just like grabbing some a stud or anything, I was up doing star jumps, doing sprints up and down, like, look at me, gaffer, look at me, I'm dead good, and things like that. And I think once I actually said to him, I think someone jumped for a ball and didn't make it, and I think he was a bit upset, and I think I said, like, gaffer, I can leap like a salmon, and I couldn't leap like a salmon, but I think it just, like, thought, get him warming up and get him away from me now. I was just very enthusiastic about getting on the pitch.
I remember interviewing Mickey Mellon for my book last year about the ways of winning or drawing matches, and there was a win Tranmere had during the National League era down at Bromley where they won 1-0, and it was a very, very late goal scored by James Nord, and the momentum that you can take from that kind of goal and getting a result, be it a draw or a win, in that kind of way so late on is so different to a regulation 1-1 where the game's dead by half time, or a 1-0 where you've scored in the 30th minute.
It's that feeling. You're just elated at the end of it. You're buzzing. It doesn't matter if it's the equaliser. It feels like a win because they've scored in the last minute. And everyone's together. You saw the fans. That gives the players a buzz. It lifts all your adrenaline. They'll be excited about the next game. So it breeds that confidence. For whatever reason why it does that, I don't know. But as you said, if it had been a 1-1 boring draw, it had been boring. Yeah, it was a draw or whatever. But because it was 1-1 last minute, everyone's excited and can't wait till the next game.
I think as well, being at Rotherham as well, and because they're one of the sides that came down last week when we spoke, I wasn't too confident we'd get anything there, to be honest, and I said I'd snap your hand off for the draw. So to do it in the manner that we've done, you know, going into the Gillingham game this week is just, as Al said, it feels like a win. That's at 95th minute, you know, limbs everywhere, you know, and that'll give a bit of momentum going into Saturday.
Absolutely, and it is Gillingham on Saturday. But the one thing that I think is really important now is that any point Tranmere pick up, away from home particularly, is a good point.
Of course, I think Mickey will be looking to just build the whole home form, win as many as you can at home, and go away and draw, and you'll stay up without a doubt if you go and do that. So, as you say, any point away from home is a good point. Obviously, you'd be looking to win some of the games, but it's a good point, and that was a great point last week. They just need to follow. Draws are always good results if you follow up with a win. So we need to follow up with a win Saturday, and they'll be looking up rather than down.
Few injury problems at the moment, though. We know that, of course, Morgan Ferry has done his knee ligaments, and he's got another 7 or 8 weeks on the sidelines, joining Mark Ellis, who's already out with a knee ligament problem. So is Evan Gums. And now young Wilson, the fullback, has gone as well, and he's been sent back to West Brom for some treatment. There's something... It's just bizarre circumstance that all these knee injuries are happening.
Yeah, I'm sure people like to dig things out. What are they doing in training? Are they doing anything differently? But sometimes you look down, it's going to happen. You're going to get injuries throughout the season, and that's what you build the squad for. But then Mickey's got to show his trust in the other players, and if he hasn't got that much trust, he'll go out and get someone on loan.
Well, he can't now, can he?
No, no.
There's no emergency loan,
no,
is there?
So, they got the signing just before the transfer deadline was on, but he's got stuck with his squad now, which in a lot of ways is good because he'll learn a lot about the players who can step up, who he can trust in the future. And every now and again, you get someone stepping up who's going to be like, wow, he's in the team now from now on.
Does in a dressing room, Al, does that settle the players once the transfer window's passed and they know no one can come in, no one's leaving now, this is us until January? Does that settle the dressing room?
It'll settle the players who aren't secure in the first team place. I think it'll settle those players because they know no one's going to come in and they're just going to be shoved out in the background. I think it settles those players. I think the lads who are you'd probably say 6 or 7 new names on the team sheet, no matter what, they won't really care either way. It is what it is. So we'll settle the ones who are on the periphery because, as well, especially now, it'll give them more options to play as well.
Did you ever have that during your career? Someone come in and you were looking at them thinking, oh no, that's me done for?
I had it possibly the other way. I was due to play away at Cardiff in a game. We brought Adam Proudlock in, which I was obviously gutted about, because he took me place and played the next 5 games. I was stuck on the bench then. But in a lot of ways it helped me because I was going to be expected to play up front on my own. It wasn't my game to hold the ball up. I wasn't the strength or target man like that. The other side of it was on transfer deadline day, Brian Little grabbed me, and Ifeanyi Onora was with us at the time. And he grabbed me before training. He says, listen, someone's coming for you. Someone's coming for Ifeanyi. I've got a decision to make whether I let you go or Ifeanyi go. I'll let you know later, sort of thing. I was coming to the end of my contract anyway. At the end of training, he said, listen, I've decided to keep you and let Ifeanyi go. And I said, that's great. If you're going to play me from now until the end of the season, give me a chance to earn a new contract. And I think I played about 22 minutes in total from then until the end of the season. So it can have a negative effect as well, as much as anything, but it's both sides of it.
It was the club who came in. It wasn't Arsenal, was it?
No, I think it was, there was York, there was Berry. There was about 3, actually. I was wanted at that point in my life.
you could, depending on who was there, you could have got a massive contract.
I could have, yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah. I think Rustin was one of them as well, so I ended up signing for them anyway. But yeah, I was thinking it was a few League Two clubs.
So as you've mentioned, there has been a new signing come in. Left-back Cameron Borthwick-Jackson. He's played first-team football. He's played Premier League football for Manchester United. He's a lad with pedigree.
Definite pedigree. And I think it's exciting just to say he's played first-team football. I think he's got about 20 odd appearances in the Premier League, which is good going, to be honest. So he's obviously got pedigree. Hopefully it's boiled down to contacts of Mickey and Les with the contact with the club and things like that, because we have good contact with Les being at Man United, and I think he'd always look to help Tranmere out when he can, so I think that's played a part. But it's exciting to get a Man United player. Hopefully he can be a good addition for us.
Yeah, exciting to see. Hopefully we'll see something of him, and he won't just be a bit poor player. Like you said, he's started in the Premier League, so in terms of ability, more than capable for where we are.
Les B and Les Parry, by the way, who's in charge of making sure the loan players go to the correct club, and he goes and watches them and all sorts at Man United. What a job.
Well, that's the other side of it. There's a lot goes into it, and I went to a talk Les did probably about a year ago. He was talking about the players, and he has a lot to do at Man United. He's obviously well thought of, and so he should be, for everything he's done over the years in both medical and management and the other side of it. So he's done great, and he's obviously well thought of. But Les is very big on details as well, so he wouldn't have sent to me if he didn't think Tranmere was a good fit. So hopefully for everyone it works out.
I'm interested in them bringing a left back in, though. Already got Liam Rydalge there, and Liam has started the season in that position, signed a new 2-year contract over the summer, so obviously Mickey sees him as integral to his plans over the next 20 or so months. But now he's brought in competition for him.
Competition's always good, pushes players on. Maybe he's not being 100% happy without Liam started the season, or maybe he's looking for something outside of his game, which Liam's possibly not capable of doing, whether it's going forward, whether it's defensively, whatever it may be. But as you say, competition can't always be a bad thing.
No, I think the more options there are, like when we were talking about the transfer deadline day closing, if you're one of those players whose name's guaranteed on the team sheet, then you know you might sort of rest on your laurels a little bit. So if there's someone snapping at your heels for a start and for that shirt, then you're going to up your game in training, even if it's by 5-10%.
Of course,
you know,
it makes a difference. Yes. You know, every small detail can make a difference. So it should push him on in a positive way.
Would you be starting him ahead of Liam?
I've not seen him, so I can't comment.
I've not seen this new lad. I'm quite happy with Liam in that position. I'm a fan of Liam Rydell. So, but then, by the same token, I don't want this lad to just come and sit on the bench for us. I want to see what he's about.
It seems a strange one if he's going to sit on the bench. I don't really understand why you bring someone that's played in Premier League and why they'd let him out on loan to someone if he's not going to play. So I wouldn't be surprised if he started.
It's interesting because there was a change of formation at Rotherham on Saturday. Tranmere went 3-5-2 and that meant Liam played as a wing-back, which he's done before, and he's done it actually really successfully. He's got a great left foot, so he's got some great assists from it.
That's what I said. Mickey might be looking at something in his game which he doesn't quite feel he fits. So maybe if Mickey does change the formation, he might start the Man United lad because he's more suited to that for the way he wants to play. So
maybe even play him as a kind of
on the left side of the three. Play Liam further up.
We will see. Time will tell.
Do you like the wing back system? Either of you?
I've played it and hated it just because you just end up running all the time. It's more secure in terms of defensively, I think, because you can filter back into a back five. You've got more men behind the ball quickly. Depends how you want to play it. But I used to like playing against it. I remember one game I was playing left. I think it was against Notts County. I was playing left wing, and I remember Ned and May on the side screaming at me, and I think it might have been Martin Taylor on the other side, just to push their wing backs back to make them go back. And we were virtually playing as like four strikers up front because of how we'd been told to play. But that allowed Gareth Roberts just to get the ball up and run 40 yards with it without being catered for. So me personally, I'm not a big fan of it going forward, but defensively it can make you a bit stronger.
Rock, sport and talk.
For Liverpool,
this
is Radio City Talk.